Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. Every week I try and find interesting people with interesting stories from around the world of transport. I hope you're enjoying the range of people who've been joining me for lunch. We've been to China, Australia, America, India and Israel. But this week we're in the north of England, a beautiful part of the country with warm and friendly people with a great sense of humour. Today's guest for lunch talks to me every day, often several times a day. In fact, in normal circumstances, she speaks to around 6.5 million people several times a day.
St Thomas's Hospital, main entrance.
She's Emma Hignett, and hers is the voice you hear every time you travel on a London bus.
Alight here for the museums.
You'll also hear her on the Elizabeth Line, go-ahead buses in the northeast, and in many other places as well. She gets fan mail, she also gets unusual requests, and keeps really very quiet when she rides on a London bus herself. We haven't spoken for ages, so it was great to catch up.
Emma, you and I have a connection, which is County Durham. Do you know why?
Ah, no, I didn't. Go on, tell me why.
Okay, so my mother comes from County Durham. My father came from Hull, but my mother came from a little village between Consett and Stanley called Anfield Plain.
Okay, I've heard of it.
Yes, you would.
I think I might have done a bus stop announcement for it.
Wow. I mean, you're at the other end, of course. I mean, we're the hill people compared with you, because we're right at the top of County Durham. And, of course, very famously, the Anfield Plain Co-op is in Beamish.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so as we jokingly say sometimes, the Anfield Plain Co-op went to Beamish so the people of the north could see what the future looked like. But I know where you are, because you're 5 minutes from Barnard Castle, aren't you?
I am just outside Barnard Castle. Yeah, nice place in the world to be.
So what's daily life like in the northeast at the moment? Because things are tough, aren't they?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I think my husband and I have realised that we're really quite insular, because our life is nearly back to normal. But that could change, of course, at any moment. The major difference for us is that my husband is working at home, whereas he works in the oil industry and has for the last, 8 years worked 4 days a week in Aberdeen. So he's down the garden currently. But we have an 11-year-old child. So lockdown was, when he was still at home, was very, very different. But of course, he was year six then and went back to school. And suddenly life went back to normal. And then his swimming club reopened. So to be perfectly honest, my life is pretty normal, other than I don't drink wine with my friends.
Well, that's terrible. And in fact, I was going to say, you are a perfect example, aren't you, of a child of COVID opportunity, just working from home, doing things digitally. So you are the pattern for the future, aren't you?
Well, I changed to working at home because I had a child. When I was pregnant, I was driving to Leeds every day, which is quite a trek from here. And there was no way I could do that with childcare. And get to Leeds and work a proper day and get back before the nursery just dumped him on the street, poor little thing. So, you know, when I was pregnant, we knew I was going to have to change job or work from home in a freelance capacity. And so we went for the working from home. And it was only a few years after I started doing the audio for Transport for London. And so that then, because I was working from home and because I had this in the bag and I was sort of going up and down to London periodically to record, and my husband just said, come on, let's just do it. Let's just spend a few grand and build a studio. If it doesn't make any money, it doesn't make any money. If it does, great. So that was, I think, about 10 years ago that we built the studio.
Amazing. Well, you would never know, would you, that you were in fact insuring your future? Because
No. And you know, and everybody had these conversations when lockdown started about, oh, you know, how are you coping? And it's like, it is no different for me, you know. And I know other voiceovers, we've had this joke about, you know, oh, we're going into lockdown. Oh, feels rather familiar. Maybe we've been doing this social isolation thing for far too long.
I know. I'm envious in a way, because, of course, for some of us, we've had to get used to it, because in all my professional life, and especially since I retired, I've been travelling. And I've been on a plane since I came out in 2018 from TfL. I've been on a plane at least every month or twice a month, doing a phenomenal number of miles. And I think one of the things, for those of us who weren't indoors most of the time, we've discovered that COVID-19 has given us a new firstly, it's given us a new work-life balance because we're at home a lot, but also that we were confusing efficiency for exhaustion. And so I think that'll make a big difference. Having said that, I bet, like me, you can't wait for the lockdown to end so we can socialise with everybody else.
You know, we live in the country, so you know, the things that our social life maybe is not, it's nowhere near what it would be or wasn't when I lived in London. But we have things like a comedy club locally, and it's a fantastic little comedy club, not least because being in the middle of rural County Durham, the comedians who pitch up are completely out of their comfort zone because they're used to multicultural city centre, maybe average age 30 to 40. And they come to Barnard Castle and they get average age 55, white, country kind, that come in with their boots on and their you know, I love it because it throws the comedians completely because they just, we laugh at the wrong things, you know, all that kind of thing. That's why I love it, amongst other things. And that it's done one socially distanced comedy night about 3 weeks ago. And I was like to my husband, we're going out. I don't care if we've got to wear masks to laugh behind, you know, but it's just that sense of normality that, oh God, come back soon.
Yeah, for sure. So I have to think about, when we do these lunches, which of course ought to be real lunches, but sadly we can't have a real lunch. So we have to have a virtual lunch. I like to think of it that other people out there in the world are eavesdropping on our conversations. I always like to think about what they would ask. So they would bound to be hoping you would say how you got to be a voiceover artist.
Okay, how I got to be a voiceover artist. I'll go right back to the beginning. I trained as a dancer. I went to ballet school and I did 3 years training, initially mainly in classical ballet. Then I moved more to musical theatre, did quite a lot of drama as well. And at some point in my third year, I remember having a conversation with my dad. And, you know, I was set to go off and take the world by storm, da-da-da-da-da, in the theatre. And my dad was like, see you on the telly one day reading the news. And this just stuck. And so I danced for a few years and I travelled as a dancer. I went to Mexico and then I went to Japan and Hong Kong and I worked in Europe a bit. And I decided it wasn't what I'd hoped it would be and it wasn't where I wanted to be either. I didn't want to be traveling all the time. So I was like, right, well, next. My dad said he could see me on the telly reading the news. That's my next job. And so I came back to England and I was like, how do I get into TV? I'll go via radio. And I wasn't a big radio fan in the slightest. But I got myself a job doing traffic news on radio, fell in love with radio and spent the next 15 years working in radio. And the voiceovers came as a sideline. So then you'd sort of get asked to do, oh, can you do a quick ad for so-and-so? And so they just came along as a sideline and it wasn't anything that I paid a lot of attention to, but it was a nice little sideline. And then I decided my mid-30s, that I was going to not present any longer. I wanted something a bit lower profile and I wanted to get out of London. And so I took a job running a radio station up here in the Northeast, which is what brought me up to the Northeast. And literally at the point where I was sort of going through the interviews for that, somebody said to me, oh, we're doing some testing for Transport for London. Do you want to put your voice tape in? And so I put my voice tape in and it took forever.
Oh, everything we did in London took forever.
It was the slowest recruitment process on a voiceover ever. But about 2 months later, she comes back to me. She says, your favourite. And I was like, yeah, right. And she's like, seriously, you are. And so then they got two of us, one bloke and one female, to do the Route 149. And then they put my voice on the 149 and tested it in January 2006. And so that's how this sort of big voiceover job came along. And I thought, oh, when this goes live, I'm just sit there and the phone's going to ring, isn't it? Yeah.
Really? I'm not surprised you said it was slow, because all those things we did in a big public authority was slow, although the organisation felt it was moving at lightning speed.
But that said, I reckon it is possibly the most researched voiceover job in the country.
So they actually got you to voice the 149, put it on the 149, and then we went out and asked the passengers what they thought. Oh, isn't that interesting?
Passengers, drivers, specific community groups as well. So blind travellers were very much involved in the consultation. That I do remember. There must be a group of London Transport for the Blind kind of thing.
And the same happened with your male competitor. So did they voice him and put
no. At that point, they only put me.
Right.
But they only put one voice on the 149. And it was quite funny because I got told little bits of the feedback. My favourite one was the one driver who said, "Oh, it's great." He said, "Because all the kids who just make a racket, you know, on their way home from school at the end of the day, no, now," he said, "they just imitate her all the way home." It's great.
So I have to ask you then, that's the other thing that people eavesdropping on our private conversation would be asking. So do you have a special London voice?
Oh, yes. Well, I have a special voiceover voice. I can't stand in front of a microphone and just talk like I normally talk. I don't know why. I can if I'm doing a radio programme, but I can't if I'm reading a script. No, I really, because I mean, you can hear I'm a northerner. I really struggle to do a northern accent in front of a microphone.
Is that so? But you don't have any trouble doing this neutral accent that you do for London, which is...
No.
So are there some words, when you go and listen to it yourself, are there some words in there, some places, for example, that you wish you had done differently or you want to change?
Whenever I travel on a bus, I have to be careful not to be too critical. I remember going, when we used to record at the Transport for London offices by Blackfriars Bridge.
Yeah, Palestrian.
And I remember taking the bus route down from King's Cross to there and literally taking a note of all the ones I wanted to re-record. And you have to kind of get over that. You have to get used to it and you have to get over it and get used to hearing your own voice. And I suppose I am now a lot more used to hearing my own voice. But also, you know, when I did those first recordings, nobody really knew what it was going to sound like. So I think I'm probably also, when I record now, I'm happier with the sound as well, because I know how I want it to come out. I know how much smile I want in it and that kind of thing.
That's interesting, because my interest, of course, was this balance between giving people enough information without bombarding them with announcements, which they then just routinely ignore. And the pattern is actually very good, isn't it? As the bus leaves the bus stop, you're saying what route it's on and where it's going. And you approach the stop, you're saying what the name of the stop is. And unless the driver then further intervenes and runs some pre-programmed announcements, that's generally what people get, which means it's not intrusive. And there's just enough there, isn't there, for people to get the information.
Yeah. And you know, it's not repeating "this is" or, you know, "this stop is" or "the next stop is." Whereas I've done another system. And they have on every single one, it goes, "the next stop is." And yeah, I kind of go, actually, I think I would go with the, give them the minimum amount of information.
Yes. And in the same way that you wouldn't write a letter where every paragraph began, "I would like you to do this. I would like you to do this." You change the slant, don't you? Because you want to make sure their attention is readdressed.
Yeah.
You want to say it a different way.
And I think, you know, you have to accept that the people listening, they have a fair idea what you're announcing, don't they?
It is interesting also, and I remember this from some of the research, that for those people who are regular travellers and don't need any assistance, they're able to blank it out of their minds perfectly easily. They don't consider it intrusive. Even if they're a regular traveller on the same bus, on the same journey every day, there are not significant complaints. So one of the nice things about your voice also is that it's sharp enough to get people's attention when they want it, but also soft enough for them to just blanket out. So then
I had a lovely conversation with Transport for London's PR on the first ever test bus, the day we did with the press, and off we went. And we're halfway around and we're listening to it. And she said to me, "Do you know why they picked your voice?" And I was like, "No, go on, tell me." And she went, because you were bland. I was like, "Thanks." And she went, no, I don't mean that. But what it is, what it comes down to, and I have this conversation often with people, is what you don't want is people getting irritated by it. You don't want it grating. And quite often a nice voice can do that if it's got a sort of slightly unusual twist to it. And that unusual twist is lovely in an advert for Asda or something. But on your 70-minute bus journey, 35 minutes to work and 35 minutes back every day, that unusual twist may well just kind of get you going, you know. So it was that sort of, it's just a straightforward voice.
Yes. And it's also interesting, and we didn't touch on this before, but I mentioned, of course, my mother comes from County Durham, so had a Geordie accent. But, of course, of her period, she was forced to sanitise it out of her speech because you just couldn't get a job in London with a Geordie accent in those days, and people thought she was Irish. So she sanitised her Geordie accent, which is the reason I don't have one, because she doesn't have one. And by the time she'd finished, she could have been an understudy for Hyacinth Bucket. She's got a straightforward, we would say without an accent, but you know what I mean. Whereas now, of course, regional accents are very popular. And media and voiceovers and commercials and so on, a regional accent is often an advantage because of the great diversity that it brings. That, for me, that's a really interesting change about how things have turned around in the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's the right voice for the right job, isn't it? So, I mean, I come back to the Asda adverts, the Asda adverts that have been running this summer. And the female who does it has a broad regional accent, and I adore it. Sure. And every time I hear it, I say to my husband, I just love that voice. And he goes, really? Like, yes, because it's just, you know, it's got so much depth and character. And, you know, you just feel like that's a real person who goes shopping. And it's just the right voice for the right job.
It certainly is. And of course, so you talk to me every day without knowing it. Of course, you're talking to several million people every day without knowing it, which is lovely. So two things I hope we will all be remembered for. You with the voices. And the other thing which I did during my time at TfL was to get a guy called Doug Rose, who's a graphic designer, to reset all the destinations and numbers that are on the front and back of the bus. So they're all consistent in terms of spacing, in terms of layout. So all the information to the passengers, the destinations on the front, and your voice on the inside is one consistent high standard. And I think that represents a high watermark, I think, for information in London, which is good. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, we did this thing, didn't we, in 2014, and you thought you'd pop in for an hour and then go and do some shopping. So what we had in 2014, it was the year of the bus. It was a promotion. And we took over Regent Street for one Sunday. It was a glorious hot day. We had buses from the latest horse bus to the latest hydrogen bus lined up in Regent Street. We had something like 450,000 people, most of whom turned up, and it was a surprise. They didn't come because it was on. They just walked into it and loved it. So, Emma, you did us a big favour that day. Just tell our listeners what you did.
I sat on a bus. No, I stood on a bus. So people were invited to come along and meet the voice of the buses. And I was doing personal recordings for people onto their mobile phones for most of them. And I think I spent the day with Simon Reed. And I think Simon and I thought, you know, we might get a steady trickle through the day, you know, one every 20 minutes or so, if we're really lucky. And we had to stop the queue in the end because there were just so many people coming to meet me and get me to record things. And I mean, some of them were really lovely, like, you know, mums bringing their kids along and, you know, kids who travel on the buses every day and kids who sort of, you know, get really into the buses and know all the bus routes are. And you know, there will be kids there who knew so much more about the bus routes than I did. But it was quite an enlightening and lovely day. And I think it shows the passion that people have for London buses. I mean, I lived in London for a long time, and that's one of the things that I suppose grates with me outside of London is that the public transport in London is brilliant. It is utterly fantastic and reliable, and it's there, and it's your first choice. It's the logical choice to get from A to B.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And of course, I mean, I don't have a car in London. What would I do with it? Because it's funny, in London, we start from the position of using public transport unless it's impossible. Whereas in many cases outside London, we start from the position of only using public transport if you have to. So London, I think, has got that right. And as you know, they're in the middle at the moment of a big argument with government over money because of the effect of the virus. So So, Emma, back in 2014 in Regent Street, what were the most memorable things that people asked you to voice on their phones?
Well, there was, you know, you have to put on the bus's voice. Please move to your side of the bed was one of them. I think I did a proposal. I think I asked somebody to marry somebody.
Now, well, I remember, I think lots of people were asking you for the name of the road where they happen to live and so on.
Yeah, and I think I did people's answer phone messages as well. You know, that when people phone them, went to their answer phone.
So, Emma, you also get fan mail, right? People write to you.
Yes, I do. I have quite a lot of people who get in touch and ask me to record personal announcements for them. And so, and it amuses me because, you know, quite often you think, oh, that I'm going to charge them. So when I send them a bill, you know, so I'll say, look, you know, it'll send me what your script is and I'll tell you how much it'll cost and you expect never to hear from them again. And several, I mean, I've done people's personal, their own model railways.
Mm. Oh, really?
I've done like hundreds of announcements for people's model railways. I've done people's own personal answer phone messages. I've done messages for them to send to people. Yeah.
That's because you're in our families. You know, we hear you every day.
And it's because I'm in your head.
Yeah, but it reminds me, Anna Ford once said this, Anna Ford, the newscaster, she said she was doing an interview with an older lady who said, there's something I just want to tell you. And Anna Ford said, no, but 15 million other people are going to hear it. No, I'm just telling you. She was live on air because she actually, Anna Ford was such a person in her life. She was in her living room every day on the screen.
Yeah.
That this,
yeah.
The people thought they were just having a personal relationship with her or with you and your insider. That's exciting. So apart from modern railways, where else can we hear you? Because you've done lots of stuff apart from London.
My other bus service, well, I do the new Elizabeth line whenever it finally opens. So that's that part of it's running. So I'm certainly on the bit out to Heathrow already. I do the new Elizabeth line. I do Go North East buses. I do East Yorkshire buses. And then once you get off buses, I do all kinds of things. So I was doing something recently and I had to go and look back and see what I'd done recently and who I'd worked for. So I'm on a podcast for Manpower Group this month. I've just done a big piece of work for Fendi in Italy and a small piece of work for Lavazza in Italy. What am I doing? I'm doing a whole load of talking watches this afternoon. And that's somebody I think who's heard me on Transport for London because he seems very keen on my voice. It's you end up working on the widest range of voiceovers. And what you become is this sort of, you get this tiny bit of knowledge on a whole load of very different things. I have an audio book that goes live in 2 days as well.
Go on, tell us about that. Where did we find that?
It's Dorling Kindersley audio book on space travel. That goes live, I believe, someone told me, the producer told me this morning, it's available in 2 days' time. So, yeah, you just end up working on loads of very different things. So I can't, you know, what a nice way to work, really.
Well, life is like that, isn't it? In fact, the advice I often give to young people when they're asking and they say, you know, how did you plan your career? Which, of course, I didn't. It was just a series of stumbles from one thing to another. And I just say to them, you do have to go with the grain a bit. I'm mixing the metaphors now, but wherever the tide is taking you, you need to go with it. Because if you try and swim across it or against it, you just won't go anywhere. But you tend to go with the flow. Life tends to send you those opportunities. I think there's a great thing about making your own luck. You do what you think you need to do. You make contacts. Other people contact you. Like in your case, people will hear you on the bus and find out where to find you and so on. So I was just going to say to you, as a successful female, what's your advice to young people in particular? What's your advice? Because, you know, just at the minute, kids coming out of school, kids coming out of university have got very poor prospects because of what's going on. So what would you say to young people listening to this?
It's interesting because whilst my child is 11, my husband has three children in their 20s. The girls are 24 and his son is 28. And they've been badly affected by this. One of them in particular was in the middle of her finals in a fashion degree. Oh. And just got abandoned. You know, a fashion degree, she's planning for a fashion show and she's making all these clothes. And normally she'd have other students to help her and da-da-da-da-da and access to facilities, and that just went. And so, you know, she got her first, good on her. She did brilliantly, but she's, you know, now looking at an industry that's closed down. So
would you encourage them to stick with more education and wait for things to improve, or get stuck in and try and get on the ladder?
I think you've got to look at your own situation. So I think education is vitally important. But that said, I'm not sure I would want to, if I was about to start a university course, I don't think I'd want to go this year. I don't think I'd want to be holed up and, you know, paying a fortune for online only courses. And so I think we've all got to ride this out. And I think for young people, it's going to be a lot harder than maybe, than it is for those of us who are established. I think one of the things that I didn't know very early on that I only learned much later on was that making contacts and people you know is vitally important. There was a mantra in radio, be nice to the people on their way up because you'll be begging them for a job when you're on your way down. But I think there is, what you know counts for a lot, but who you know also can open doors.
Now, isn't it interesting you should say that, because when I was talking to groups of young people, whenever I've done this, I've said to them, you've got one big advantage over me. You've got a phone with an infinite contact capability, which we didn't have. I had an address book, and if you lost it, you lost it. Phone numbers were badly written, scrawled in the back of a diary, and at the end of the year, you had to transfer them across or lose them. And I say to them, look, everybody you meet, every business card you get, make it a discipline to put it in your contacts database, because by the time you're 10 or 15 or 20 years into your career, you will have a fabulous database of people. And I promise you that it's the people who you know who will help you get into the next things that you want to do. And I encourage people, and I see it terrible with the kids, they'll put sort of scrappy shortcut, you know, like Fred and a phone number. No, give them their full name and their title and their number and their home number and their address and their postcode, because you've got this great search capability. And the next time you're looking for somebody, you've forgotten he's called Fred, but you know that he works for AstraZeneca, you can search for it and find it. So my advice has been, not only as you've advised, for them to be, to make as many contacts as possible as friends, but in my case, say to document it, because these will always be useful to you in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the young people these days are lucky in that, you know, I worked early in my career as a dancer, and it was in the days before social media. And I think I'm only in touch with maybe two or three people that I danced with. And you kind of think, God, if we'd had Facebook then, we'd still all be linked on Facebook, wouldn't we? They have that benefit. You know, get on LinkedIn, just make the contacts. And I'm quite often on Zoom networking things now. And I will just, while I'm doing it, I'm going and finding all the people on the network on LinkedIn and connecting to them, just because you never know where that link is going to come. And the other thing I would say is, do not just use email. Pick up the phone and speak to people, because we hide behind emails so easily. And actually, you know what? Put somebody on the spot, talk to them and say, I need your advice, or I need your help. I need you to open a door for me. And be honest about what you want as well. And the other thing that I'm just spewing out all the things I've picked up along the way. One of the other people I worked with in radio was always told, I mean, it was different for me because I was a presenter in radio. So we had this sort of showbiz lifestyle, and she was same age as me, but she was on the sales side. And she said she was always told by everybody to dress, but more than that, be the person for the job you want. You might be a lowly sales exec, but don't dress and act like a lowly sales exec. Dress and act like the sales manager. Self-belief, and you know, we always say that young people kind of, I love their self-belief, and you know, they don't have that doubt that I think comes as we all get older and realize what we can and can't do. But sometimes you need to put that self-belief in the right place and use it in the right way. And there's always people around to provide advice.
Well, Emma, that's fabulous advice. And believe it or not, our half an hour lunch break is already up. So isn't that amazing? Doesn't time fly? And life has flown for us. But what fabulous advice for young people in particular to act, as you suggested, to act for the job that you aspire to have.
Because yes,
a sure way to get it. Very, very good advice. And what a lovely way for us to finish our lunch. So if you want to hear more from Emma, she's emmahignett.com, and you can hear her voice several million times a day on London's buses, but also on lots of other places around the country. Emma, it's been fabulous to have you on Lunch with Leon.
Lunch with Leon is an itthub.net production. Please go across to our website where you will find details of not only of this podcast, how to subscribe, but also our news channel and lots of information. I've been really thrilled to catch up with my old friend, Emma, as I say, whose voice I hear every day, but I only get a chance to talk to her once every few years. We must do it more often. Emma, thank you so much for joining us today and look forward to catching up for real soon.
Leon, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been really good fun. Thank you very much.
Hi, Emma. I think they've all gone now. Let's just do that favourite outtake.
Little Britain. Really?